Is this the dagger?
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Legion of Sports podcast. I'm Harrison Klein, along with Jake Anthony. So, Jake, back from quarantine. How you doing?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a lonely few days. Just spent a few days in the Holiday Inn downtown Burlington. But, I mean, we're back here in Elon, North Carolina, and got a negative COVID test, so everything's going well. So, Harrison, what's your top story of the week?
So, my top story of the week is just sports in general. You know, in the last 5 days, we've had MLB playoffs, Stanley Cup finals, NFL football, college football, NBA finals, and even a tennis majors going, or a Grand Slam, they call it, the French Open. And I mean, even though it's obviously due to unfortunate circumstances with the COVID pandemic, it's just amazing that we've had all this sports going on at once. And, you know, we're never going to see anything like it again. So just kind of taking it all in and enjoying it. How about you?
Yeah, so mine is it's actually the kind of the opposite of your headline. It's the COVID outbreak within the NFL. So the Titans and Steelers are supposed to play on Sunday, but there were 3 Titans players that tested positive and 5 staff members that tested positive for the coronavirus that could put this game in jeopardy. The league is trying to do everything right in terms of protocols, and so they closed down the Tennessee Titans facilities until Saturday at the earliest. We'll know more later on in the week, but right now the game status is up in the air, and since the Steelers and Titans buys do not align, it's going to be very difficult for the NFL to reschedule this game. And like we talked about last week about the MLB and how some of those teams didn't actually play the full schedule games because of the COVID outbreak, it's going to be interesting to see. They were talking about potentially playing it on Monday or Tuesday so that they can squeeze this game in this week. But if for whatever reason, for whatever circumstances it is, if they can't get this game scheduled this week, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out down the line.
Yeah, and I think talking about the MLB is definitely interesting because it's a lot easier to reschedule games in baseball. You can play doubleheaders, and, you know, we saw the Marlins miss, I think, 2 weeks it was right in the beginning of the season. They were able to get the full 60 games in, and the Cardinals, who missed over 2 weeks, were able to get 58 games in, so just too shy. And it's going to be really interesting to see how the NFL does it. You mentioned maybe playing the game on Monday or Tuesday. I don't really know how you can play this game Sunday, because if you can't get into the facility until Saturday, it's not really fair to the Titans to be able to only
huge
have
competitive advantage.
Yeah, exactly. It's a big advantage for the Steelers. So I think playing it on Monday or Tuesday is definitely the right move, and it'll be really interesting to see what the NFL does here.
Yeah, so let's move into the actual NFL games that were played last weekend. So first we have the Ravens-Chiefs. What did you see out of that game?
I mean, I think Patrick Mahomes, we've run out of words to talk about him. He's ridiculous. He had another massive game, 385 yards, 5 total touchdowns, 134 passer rating. And I mean, just watching him play is so mesmerizing, because he just makes it look so effortless, so easy. He doesn't look like he's throwing the ball very hard, and he launches it 50 yards off of his back foot. He just makes the defense look so bad and so silly that it really isn't fair. And I mean, the throw he had to Tyreek Hill off his back foot for a touchdown was ridiculous. He had a long touchdown to Mecole Hardman that was ridiculous. And another stat I want to point out about Mahomes is in his career, in September, he's 10-0 with 32 touchdowns and 0 interceptions. So, I mean, I don't know what it is about September, but I mean, this guy comes to play every week, every year, but something about September, he loves that warmer weather.
Yeah, so for me, it's not really fair to compare Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes. Obviously, they're going to be compared. They're MVPs in back-to-back seasons. They're the young NFL quarterbacks of this league. But nothing to take away from Lamar Jackson. He's great. He's spectacular. But Patrick Mahomes is on another level. He's the best quarterback we have in this game. They blitzed him 24 times last night, and of those 24 times, he was 17 of 24, threw for 230 yards while under pressure. That's not normal. It shouldn't be that way. And then on the other side of the ball, Lamar Jackson struggled, mainly because they didn't have a lead. The Ravens and Lamar Jackson are built on running the ball and then successfully throwing it off of that. Kind of, they had to do it the opposite. They had to pass the ball and then try to run the ball off of that. He only threw for 97 yards. And when they were behind 13-3, I could tell that it was going to be a difficult game for them, and it wasn't going to be a very fun time for the Ravens because they were built to play with the lead.
Yeah, and I mean, just building off of that, the Ravens, since drafting Lamar Jackson, are 0-10 when trailing at halftime, and the largest deficit they've ever overcome was only 8 points. So we've seen time and time again that when they get down big points, more than one score, they have a lot of trouble coming back into the game. And you said it, only 97 yards, a career low passing for Lamar Jackson. That's just not going to get it done. And, you know, we saw this in the playoff game last year, too, against the Titans, where once he has to really just step back and throw in the pocket, he doesn't look as comfortable. He's not... You know, he's a very good passer and much improved since his rookie year, but he's still not an amazing passer. He's more a dual threat. And, you know, the thing with the Ravens is that the hardest part about guarding them is that they can run and pass on every single play, but when they trail in games and you know that they're going to throw the ball and they become a lot more one-dimensional, it's a lot easier to guard them.
Yeah, and so after the game, something I saw was interesting is Patrick Mahomes was talking about the game plan. He said that Andy Reid comes up with a new game plan each and every week, no matter what is going on. And most coaches and players are going to say this, but, I mean, you could tell. There's some plays out there that don't look normal. They don't look like they should be run by an NFL team. Then they end up in a touchdown. They end up in 60-yard touchdowns, and that's just how Andy Reid's offense are run. So next week against the Patriots, it's going to be fun to watch. Obviously, the Chiefs have the talent advantage. But, I mean, the coaching right there with Bill Belichick, he is one of the great masterminds defensively, and he'll have a great defensive game plan. So that's something that I'm going to be watching out for next week. And then another thing from this game, is even though we're only in week three, it's a very important game for the Chiefs and the Ravens, because even though the Ravens will be fine, they'll earn a playoff spot and they'll make it to the playoffs. This loss could cost them the bye, and there's only one bye per conference this year. So it's not a huge deal, but it is something to look out for.
Yeah, and so just backtracking on your point back to talking about the Andy Reid and this offense, and I mean, it's Andy Reid, but also the weapons they have. They had 5 players with over 4 catches. All of them had over 60 yards receiving. I just don't really know how to stop this offense, and a lot of the announcers were talking about the only chance that you really have is to get consistent pressure from rushing 4 guys, which is why the Chargers, a team that we don't think is very good, have had success against the Chiefs in the past, at least stopping them. And we saw them, I think it was only 23 points they allowed last week, because they're able to get a lot of pressure from their front 4 and then just drop everyone back and worry about the pass. And if your team isn't able to do that, you're going to struggle. And then also, talking about Andy Reid, he just has some wacky plays where, you know, these screen passes where Mahomes will fake to 2 people and then dump it off to Kelsey. They had an underhand pass to the fullback for a touchdown and an offensive line touchdown. So, I mean, I really don't know how you guard these Chiefs, and we'll see if the Patriots can figure it out this week.
Yeah, I mean, going off of the wacky plays, there was one play where they had a stack of 4 or 5 wide receivers lined up, and, I mean, that's not something you see. That's something maybe you see in college football, but not necessarily in the NFL. So moving on to the Packers versus Saints, what did you see in that game?
So... we talked about this in week 1, how Aaron Rodgers looked great against the Vikings. We said week 2 against the Lions wouldn't be a huge test, and we were looking at this week 3 matchup against the Saints, and he delivered. He looked phenomenal, 283 yards, 3 touchdowns, and that was all without Devontae Adams. This season he has 9 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, and I mean, whatever, drafting Jordan Love worked for the Packers because they really got the best out of Aaron Rodgers again, and I think we can both agree that Rodgers the last year or two hasn't looked the same as, you know, the elite level Aaron Rodgers, but I think he might be back to that level this season.
Yeah, and you just talked about the drafting of Jordan Love, and I think that really lit a fire under Aaron Rodgers, and obviously he had to play for the Packers this year. He's under contract, so he couldn't go anywhere, but I don't think he wants to go anywhere. Obviously the drafting of Jordan Love may have put a wrench in that plan, but this season he's thrown for just under 900 yards and 9 passing touchdowns through 3 weeks. Those numbers are incredible. That's not something you just talked about. It's not something that we've seen in the past 2 or 3 years. But I don't know if it was the drafting of Jordan Love. I don't know if it's more comfortable with the game plan. All could be a factor. But, I mean, we talked about the running game a week ago, and Aaron Jones basically carried that offense because he was unstoppable. This week, he had less than 70 yards of rushing offense, and they're just capable of scoring in such a multitude of different ways. Aaron Rodgers is obviously an elite quarterback. He shows that he's still an elite quarterback. But when you have such a great running back there that's just sitting there on those games and you're still winning those games, and then you could still like pound and ground when you need to, it's a really hard offense to stop.
Yeah, and I think a lot of credit needs to go to Matt LaFleur, the second-year head coach. He has a 16-3 record in 2 seasons as the head coach, and I think what he's done with his team is really impressive. Last year, they were 13-3, but I don't really think people thought they had the talent to be 13-3. But I think this year they can go 13-3, and I think they have even more talent this year. They look even better than they did last year. And I mean, the offense is averaging 40.3 points per game through three games. That's almost unheard of.
Yeah, that's not normal.
Yeah, and obviously they won't keep it up, but I mean, next week they play the Falcons, so expect them to be 4-0, and then they get the Buccaneers in week 5. And I mean, I think this Packers team, them and the Seahawks, who we're going to talk about in a little bit, I think those are the two clear-cut best teams in the NFC right now.
Yeah, so Rodgers looks more comfortable than ever with this coaching staff. And the defense, I mean, they looked great at the beginning of the year last year after those free agent signings, but they fell off towards the end of the year. I think that they're slightly improved from last year. And, I mean, the Packers are aiming for their second straight NFC Championship game, which, if you would have told me that at the beginning of last year, I wouldn't have believed you because, like you just mentioned, the talent-wise, I didn't see it. So what did you see from the Saints side of the ball?
So last week I talked about how Drew Brees doesn't really look the same, but I'm honestly not as concerned with that anymore because the offense is still doing well. Drew Brees is a smart enough quarterback to still read the defense and still make the right play. And while he is still missing throws, which isn't a good thing, he isn't, you know, really making costly mistakes, throwing bad interceptions like other quarterbacks would. And I think this is a really interesting stat that I found. He only 1.9% of his passes have traveled more than 20 yards down the field this year, and that's down from 9.9% last year, so obviously something different. 4.6 air yards per attempt, last in the NFL. But I mean, this team still put up 30 points against a pretty good Packers defense without Michael Thomas, so they're finding ways to make it work, and Alvin Kamara is, I mean, he's the main reason why. He had 197 yards, 2 touchdowns, a ridiculous 52-yard touchdown, so Drew Brees is handing it off and dumping it off to Alvin Kamara. Clearly it works for them.
Yeah, I mean, you just talked about how Drew Brees, you're not too concerned. And, I mean, I wrote in my notes that Drew Brees would be fine. So 2 years ago, he was 28th in passing yards per play. Last year, he was 30th in passing yards per play. And right now, he sits at 32nd. So, obviously, that's a decline, but it's nothing dramatic. I mean, I think it's just how the Saints offense is run and how Sean Payton has adapted to having an older quarterback. He knows the limitations of his quarterback. He knows that Drew Brees will make the right throw. Maybe he won't make the farthest throw, but he's going to make the right throw. And Kamara just looked ridiculous. Some of those plays just didn't seem like they were supposed to work out. He was just running down the field and passing people, and it was just incredible to watch. So he's really carrying the load of this offense right now. And, I mean, you touched on Michael Thomas. They didn't have him for the second straight week. And if they can get him back, then that'd be huge for this offense. They can probably take a step forward. But, I mean, I saw them play a much better game than they did against the Raiders, but it needed to be reversed, if anything, because this the Packers team is much better than the Raiders.
Yeah, and I want to talk about the defense now for the Saints, too, because that really is my concern with the team. They let up 31.3 points per game through three games this year, and last year they let up only 21 points per game, which was near the top of the league, so they're letting up 10 more points per game this year, and this is a defense that we expect to dominate week in and week out on all levels, and they just have not been able to do that. They can't stop opponents on the ground or in the air, and it's not like there's injuries. There's no excuses. This team just is not playing well. Dennis Allen, their defensive coordinator, needs to figure it out. And the discipline is still a massive concern for me. 8 penalties for 83 yards Sunday night, where the Packers only had 2 penalties for 10 yards. So the discipline is a big issue. Their penalty yards are racking up a lot, and it's really hurting this team.
Yeah, in all three games, they've lost the penalty margin. You just talked about that. But I want to talk about the defense as well. I mean, this offense, obviously they're going to put up points, but they're not capable of scoring 35 to 40 points per game. They're maybe capable of scoring 30 points per game, but especially without Michael Thomas right now, I don't really know the timetable for his injury, but if they can't get him back in the next 2 or 3 weeks, they're definitely not going to put up those 40 points per game that they're giving up. So I just don't see this offense being capable of that explosiveness and scoring that many points. So this defense really needs to step it up. And you mentioned they don't have injuries. They have that basically the same skeleton of a defense that they had last year. So there's really no excuses. And just like you just mentioned, Dennis Allen needs to figure it out.
Yeah, and real quickly before we move on to our next matchup, their next four games are at Detroit, versus the Chargers, versus the Panthers, and at the Bears. So those are four very winnable and probably, you know, should be locks for them to win, or you would think. So, I mean, they could definitely be 5-2 after the next 4 weeks, which would definitely be a big turnaround for them. So now we're going to move on to another thrilling game that the Cowboys played in this week. They lost to the Seahawks 38-31, and, you know, Russell Wilson, just phenomenal once again. Jake, I want to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, so this kind of, I didn't see this as a major headline, so it might have gone unnoticed, but Russell Wilson passed Patrick Mahomes' 2018 record of 13 touchdown passes. He threw 14 in the first 3 weeks. This is absolutely unheard of. Patrick Mahomes' 2018 season was ridiculous, especially for how young he was, but regardless, it was ridiculous. Russell Wilson is on pace for 75 touchdown passes. He's not going to make it to 75, obviously, but I mean, if he hits 50, there's only three players that have ever hit 50. Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, and Patrick Mahomes, three of the best quarterbacks we've ever seen in terms of talent and legacy, honestly. So, I mean, this defense is, in terms of the Seattle defense, is struggling right now. I think they can figure it out down the stretch of the season, but the offense looks immaculate.
Yeah, and, I mean, Russell Wilson, another 5-touchdown performance, including a great game-winning drive with under 2 minutes left. He had that game-winning touchdown to DK Metcalf. I mean, he looks absolutely unstoppable. He's, I mean, in my opinion, the MVP through 3 weeks, it's him and Patrick Mahomes, but I think he takes it so far with 14 touchdowns, like you said, ridiculous. And DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett have really turned themselves into a really good wide receiver duo, probably top 5, top 10 in the league. They combined for 210 yards and 4 touchdowns, which is ridiculous for just two guys to do that. One interesting thing is Chris Carson, their starting running back, did get hurt. He sprained his knee. They don't know how long he's going to be out, but he will miss most likely a few weeks. So Carlos Hyde and Travis Homer will be the running backs from now on, but I want to expand on that Seahawks defense. They're letting up 29 points per game. They've let up the most yards in the league, and they face some pretty good offenses, but teams just don't seem to be scared of the Seahawks defense anymore. This isn't the Legion of Boom era, and, you know, I think as good as the Seahawks offense looks, the defense looks just as bad.
Yeah, so I just want to touch on that defense as well. So last year they finished 6th in yards allowed. You just mentioned they've given up the most yards in this season already, in this young season. But Pete Carroll, I feel like his defenses are typically adopt the mentality of bend, don't break, where they'd rather allow long drives that lead to field goals instead of short drives where they make mistakes, lead to long touchdowns. So, I mean, this defense is tied for 2nd in the league in interceptions. I do see some bright spots. You mentioned it's not the same defense. I would totally agree with that, where they don't have that same caliber of defense they're used to, but they also don't have the same caliber of offense in a different way, in a better way. So their offense is way better than they're used to. Their defense is a little bit worse than they're used to, but I think that they can figure it out and probably make a deep playoff run because of it.
Yeah, and I think another thing is that with the Seahawks passing a lot more, they're able to get quicker drives. They're getting off the field more, which means that their defense is playing more than we're used to seeing, where the Seahawks team of, you know, the last decade really have been so run-focused and run-heavy, even with Russell Wilson, that they would grind out these long drives with Marshawn Lynch and most recently Chris Carson. But now they're getting these quicker drives with long, you know, passing plays, long touchdown throws, and the defense is, you know, that it's not good because they're on the field a lot more. They're getting more tired, and I mean, it's been a big issue for this team.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really think of that, but I want to talk about the Cowboys real quick. So because of how bad their division is, nobody is above 500 in the NFC East. I think they have a very good shot, if not a great shot, at making the playoffs. They're -4 in the turnover differential through 3 weeks, which is not very good. And see, what I don't really understand with this offense is how Ezekiel Elliott only had 34 rushing yards. He had 14 carries, which I think he needed to have more. But Dak Prescott threw the ball 57 times. I feel like this offense is facing an identity crisis, because they want to run the ball. That's what they think that they're meant to do. But their offensive addition of CeeDee Lamb in the draft and their other spectacular wide receivers and weapons that they have are sort of forcing you to call run plays or call passing plays. And I just think 57 passing attempts from Dak Prescott is way too much. Zeke needs to see the ball a lot more. And I feel like, I mean, we just talked about the Ravens a few minutes ago and how they need to play with the lead. I feel like they need to adopt this mentality, except they could also come from behind, which we've seen. So if they adopt this run mentality where that's what they need to do in the first and second quarter, they get that lead and then they can keep going. But if it doesn't work, then they adopt the passing. You can't go right out and just adopt a passing play, because that's just not a good formula the first 3 weeks.
So I sort of agree with you here, where I do think there definitely needs to be more balance. I don't think Dak Prescott should throw it 57 times a game, but he still had 473 yards, 3 touchdowns. He did have 2 interceptions, so did make some mistakes. But I think when you look at the Seahawks team, the Seahawks defense specifically, their weakness is in their secondary. And when you have, you know, 3 wide receivers, Gallup, Cooper, and CeeDee Lamb, and even Cedric Wilson came out of nowhere for 100 yards and 2 touchdowns this week, when your strength is in your passing game, as it seems the Cowboys might be now, even even though they're still a great running team. I think their game plan this week was just to throw the ball a lot more than run it. And they also got down pretty early in this game, trailed by 2 touchdowns at some point in the second half. So they were also just throwing it a lot. And while I definitely see what you mean, I think there needs to be more balance. I'm not really as concerned because I think that was more just part of their game plan this week.
Yeah, I mean, it very well could have been. But their next two games against, or actually next 4 games against the Browns, Giants, Cardinals, and the Washington football team. The Cardinals I'm not really talking about here, but the three other mediocre matchups they have, I really want to see them push the ball down their throat in terms of running it and just dominate the offensive front, because they're very capable of doing that. We've seen it in the previous years. Yes, they've lost one or two of their stud offensive linemen, but I mean, it's not something that they're not capable of doing. And I agree with you that that very much could have been their game plan, but I need to see that they're still capable of doing that, because that is one of their strengths on offense.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that. And just to talk about the defense real quick, you mentioned -4 turnover differential. They only have 2 takeaways on defense this season, which is tied 23rd in the league, which is not what you want at all. They've allowed the 7 most yards in the league this season, and teams are scoring on 52% of their drives against them, which is the 7th worst in the NFL. So, I mean, if they want to win games, their defense needs to figure it out. And I think just overall in the Cowboys, they're a much better team than their 1-2 record shows and how they played this week. They have a great offense. The defense still needs to improve, but I think when you look at this NFC East as a whole, they're definitely still the favorites, but I think it more so has to do with the other three teams really not being good and the Cowboys just being a solid team, but nothing special.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, where they should not be 1-2 in terms of their overall talent. They're a much better team on paper, and their division is pitiful right now. They're not very good at all. So like I talked about a few minutes ago, they are still the favorites. They still have a great chance to make the playoffs, but I mean, we just have to see how they figure it out down the road. So what did you see from this Rams-Bills game on Sunday?
So, I mean, I talked about it. Josh Allen was phenomenal once again. I talked about it last week, where I think he's going to finish top 3 in the MVP voting this year. And he was fantastic once again. 4 touchdowns, 311 yards, and led a game-winning 11-play, 75-yard touchdown that ended with a touchdown pass with 15 seconds left to win it. And he's just continuing to prove people wrong and really enter the conversation of, you know, the top echelon of quarterbacks in the league. And, you know, another stat that shows that is among quarterbacks, he's the 2nd most passing yards, 2nd most touchdowns, and 2nd best passer rating. And so he's been phenomenal through 3 weeks. And, you know, this Bills team looks really good right now.
Yeah, so as much as it hurts me to agree with you on this, it would be silly for me to deny the fact that Josh Allen is in the conversation for MVP. I mean, I wouldn't call him the front runner. We just talked about Patrick Mahomes and Russell Wilson, but he is definitely a candidate for me. And it's going to be very interesting to see if he can sustain this type of play, because if he can, then I mean, he would prove everyone wrong. They're 2nd in the league with 9.1 yards per attempt, and they're only behind Russell Wilson, who we just talked about is spectacular. The most impressive thing for me was the 11-play, 75-yard drive, which he capped off with a game-winning touchdown, in addition, he fought off a late-game deficit for the second week in a row. He had a few minor mistakes. I mean, he's not perfect, obviously, in terms of taking long sacks and committing a few minor penalties, but ultimately, the only thing that matters is if he continues to improve and if he wins the game. And so far, through 3 weeks, he's done both each and every week. They're 3-0. Everything looks good for them, and I mean, I talked about it last week. The Rams defense isn't incredible like they used to be, but they're no joke. They're not a bad defense by any means. I would say they're right above the middle of the pack. They're just not a bad defense at all. So Josh Allen putting up these type of numbers and winning the game against them is very impressive.
Yeah, and just to look at their offense as a whole right now. So last year, they were 23rd in points and 24th in yards. This year, through 3 weeks, they're 3rd in points and 4th in yards. And I want to give a lot of credit to Brian Daboll. I think that's how you say his name. He's their offensive coordinator, and he's really elevated this offense with turning Josh Allen into a star quarterback and really changing this offense from more run-heavy to a lot more passing and really getting Josh Allen involved in many other ways. And so his last 2 jobs have been under Nick Saban at Alabama and under Bill Belichick with the Patriots. And I just think this is a name that you need to keep in mind this offseason, because he's probably going to be a hot head coaching candidate and could definitely be coaching one of the worst teams in the league at one of the teams looking for a new head coach at this time, this next year.
Yeah, so I want to talk about the Rams real quick. I think that that they'll be fine going down the stretch. I think that, especially with this expanded playoff format, that they could very well be a playoff team, if not definitely be a playoff team. But even though they trailed by 25 points, I thought that their attempt at a comeback was very impressive. Sean McVay proved that he is still a very good coach through his halftime adjustments and in-game solutions to their struggling offense, and he turned that around. I just talked about their defense. They're kind of middle of the pack in terms of efficiency, but their offense continues to improve week in and week out, and they're sitting at 2-1. So I still think that they have a very good shot to reach the playoffs.
Yeah, and you talked about Sean McVay, his adjustments in the second half. He blamed the loss on him, saying that his game plan was not good in the first half and that he really got out-coached in that first half, but really impressed me with his second half comeback. And I think another big thing is that the rushing attack from the Rams that we saw was critical in their Super Bowl run 2 years ago is back. They had 167 yards on the ground, 5.2 yards per carry, and Darrell Henderson really starting to break out with another 100-yard performance. And another key is that Cooper Kupp had a big game, and you know, after a rough second half last year where he didn't have any 100-yard games, he had over 100 yards this game for the first time since, I think, playing the Bengals last year when he had 215 yards in about week 8. So, you know, this offense still really impressed me, and I do agree. I think the Rams will be in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, and real quick, I just want to touch on their next two games. They play the Giants, and then they go to Washington to play the football team, and they could very easily be sitting at 4-1 and be one of the best teams in terms of record in the next two or three weeks.
Yeah, so now we'll move on to our final game of the week, and so it's going to be Bears versus Falcons, where the Bears came back and won it 30-26. The Falcons led 26-10 with 6.5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Then they let up 20 straight points. And yes, this is the same Falcons team that let up 15 points to the Cowboys in the last 5 minutes last week. So my biggest takeaway is that Dan Quinn should be fired. I don't think that this is acceptable. He's coached for his job last year down the stretch, and they had a great second half of the season. That's the only reason he still has a job right now. But I don't know how you can accept both of these losses 2 weeks in a row. They play the Packers next week, probably going to lose that, and you know, if not now, then when? Because I just don't really understand. He's a defensive-minded head coach, and their defense is 32nd in points and 31st in yards. And I just think you need a new culture change in Atlanta because it's not good there right now.
Yeah, so obviously it's going to be hard to take out the Super Bowl-winning season. But if you do take out that Super Bowl-winning season, under Dan Quinn, the Falcons' records have been 8-8, 10-6, 7-9, and 7-9. So, and you just mentioned last year they started off, I don't know the exact number, but very bad. They finished, I believe it was 7-2. So they finished the season very well, but if they didn't, he would have been fired then. Obviously, he won a Super Bowl for that team. Obviously, they love him in terms of bringing a championship to that city. But, I mean, at some point, you just have to let go of that if you're the Falcons organization. And they don't look very good right now. The biggest thing for me is letting up those leads. I mean, the Cowboys, they had a 15-point lead with 5 minutes left, and I don't know. It's just very hard to swallow. I'm not even a Falcons fan, but if I was, I couldn't imagine how hard that is to swallow for them. And, I mean, the offense looks pretty good. I feel like the defense might be the I don't really know. I can't pinpoint it because each week it seems to be a different thing. Obviously, I mean, I just talked about them being in the playoffs and them actually making it to the Super Bowl, but they've only made it to the playoffs 2 out of Dan Quinn's 5 years. So I don't see a justification for him still being there. Maybe you wait to the end of the season, but I don't really see a point in that either, because you can bring in an interim, or you can promote an interim throughout your organization and you can give him a chance, because right now I don't think Dan Quinn is the answer.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you on that. And looking at the other side of this matchup, the Bears, so Nick Foles came in, and so Mitch Trubisky is now benched. Nick Foles came in, led a great comeback, obviously, as we mentioned, 188 yards and 3 touchdowns all in the fourth quarter, en route to a big comeback victory. And Foles is just a smarter quarterback in terms of not turning the ball over. He reads the defense much better than Mitch, as you know, we saw Mitch had some really, you know, just bad mistakes looking out at the defense and, you know, missing easy zone coverages and reads like that. And so, I mean, I think Nick Foles is definitely the right option for them moving forward. And you know, Allen Robinson had a big breakout game, his best game of the season, 10 catches, 123 yards, and a touchdown. And most of that came in with Foles. So I think if you're an Allen Robinson fantasy owner, like I think you are, Jake, yeah, I am too. Yeah. So definitely happy with that. And I mean, overall, the Bears offense just looked much more competent and much better with Nick Foles out there.
Yeah, I was just going to talk about Allen Robinson. The replacement of Nick Foles is huge for him in terms of fantasy value, obviously, but also in terms of his own production, because he's trying to get a contract, he's trying to make his money. But I think Nick Foles, we saw it in Philadelphia a few years ago, I think with him the big thing that gets him going is coming into the game and being that underdog and proving himself. But I don't think that this could last for another 12, 13 weeks if they make the playoffs. And I think it was a little bit too early. Obviously, Mitchell Trubisky was struggling, but I might even be tempted to say that we might see Mitchell Trubisky again this year, because Nick Foles, as good of a quarterback he is, he's also injury prone, so that could be a factor as well. But as good of a quarterback as he is, or at least as good of a backup as he is, I don't think that he's capable of sustaining this type of success that he had this game all season, and it's going to be hard to justify that if you're Matt Nagy going back to Mitchell Trubisky, the guy that you just benched.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I do think we'll see Mitchell Trubisky start another game for the Bears, and I think it was Dan Graziano on ESPN, who is as tuned into the league as anyone is. He said that he would be shocked if Nick Foles starts the last, I think, 12 games for this Bears team, so that'll be something to watch out for. And just quickly on the Bears defense, they really did a good job showing up when they had to, letting up no points in the fourth quarter. But I think the Bears as a whole, they're 3-0. I personally think they're the worst 3-0 team in the league, but I mean, they found ways to win these close games. They haven't played great teams, but you know, it'll be interesting to see as their schedule toughens up the next number of weeks, you know, how they can do and if they can keep this strong record.
Yeah, I mean, you just touched on their schedule. I was just going to read it off. They play the Colts, the Buccaneers. They have an easy game against the Panthers. Then they play the Rams, the Saints, and the Titans. So I think it's going to be a very difficult stretch for them. Nick Foles is going to have to – I mean, if Nick Foles was the quarterback for the first three games against the Lions, Giants, and Falcons, I think that they would have been 3-0, but by a bigger margin, because I think he's the better quarterback. But I think that you needed to wait a little bit more to give your team a spark to maybe make a playoff run, and I think it was just a little bit too early. Yeah. So real quick before we move into the next segment, I just got an alert that the NFL is postponing Sunday's game. They're targeting Monday night as an
option. For Titans-Steelers.
Yeah, for the Titans-Steelers game. They're targeting Monday night as an option, but it could also be moved to Tuesday or another week in the season. So just something to keep an eye on. So what is your hot take of the week, Harrison?
So my hot take is that Jalen Hurts will start a game for the Eagles this season at quarterback, and I don't think it'll be because Carson Wentz is injured. I think it'll just be because Carson Wentz is not a good quarterback anymore. Carson Wentz has been brutal this season, and he didn't play well at all against the Bengals. He had 225 yards, one touchdown, and two really bad interceptions for a 64 passer rating, and his two interceptions were really bad, both decisions and just really bad throws. And so on the season, he has 6 interceptions through 3 games after having only 7 each of the last 2 seasons. And, you know, the excuse going down the stretch last year was he had a lack of weapons and that's why he struggled. They upgraded his weapons, and granted, some of them have been injured, but he has only regressed. He has not looked good at all. He's missed some wide open receivers. Jake, we were watching that Bengals Eagles game.
Didn't look very good.
And I mean, there was one play in particular where Miles Sanders beat a linebacker off the line of scrimmage and was wide open for what would have been a 50, 60 yard touchdown. It was about a 20 yard throw and Wentz overthrew him by about 10 yards. And, you know, it was just a terrible throw. And my big question is, what has Carson Wentz really done for this team? He didn't win a Super Bowl. Nick Foles did. He's never won a playoff game. He's been a solid quarterback the last 2 years since his injury, but hasn't done anything. The Eagles spent a second-round pick on Jalen Hurts, and you know they wouldn't do that if they didn't have some idea of putting him into the game at quarterback at some point. And I just think the point is going to come soon where Wentz, you know, if he continues to look really bad, which I think he will, the Eagles don't look good as a team, and I think that, you know, there's going to be a point, you know, maybe week 12 or 13 where they only have 3 or 4 wins, and they say, you know what, let's see what we got in Jalen Hurts, just so we know. And, you know, I think that's going to be the point where he becomes a starting quarterback for the Eagles.
Yeah, so I'm going to talk about this a little bit later in the podcast, but I just want to mention real quick, I mean, you talked about how he hasn't really done anything, but the only thing for me is that they invested a first-round pick. I know it was maybe 4 or 5 years ago, but you talked about his weapons, and Greg Ward, which many of you probably have no idea who that is, had 8 receptions last week, and he was their leading receiver. I would totally agree with you that he has looked very bad throughout the 3 weeks, and the Eagles are probably the most talked about winless team through 3 weeks in NFL history because they had such high expectations in their 0-2-1. They definitely should have beat the Bengals, not because of how bad the Bengals are, but because they had so many opportunities to win that game.
The Bengals actually should have won that game. Yeah. Carson Wentz, you know, blew
it. And the Eagles basically played for a tie, which Doug Peterson came out and said that was the wrong move, and I mean, I can't even blame it on anything else. I can't blame it on their defense because they have not let up that many points throughout the season, and their running game has been incredible. Miles Sanders almost had 100 yards. They rushed for 175 as a team. So I think there's a lot of issues here, and I don't know if it all falls on Carson Wentz's shoulders, and I just think that he's doing too much and trying to be the hero when he's very much not capable of doing that.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm a Bengals fan. I'm honest. I know how bad this Bengals defense is, and we talked week one about how bad the Browns look and or how bad they looked, and they went out and put, I think it was 35 points on this Bengals defense and just dominated in all facets of the game. And Carson Wentz and his team struggled to put up, I think it was 23 points all game. And so, I mean, it's just really not a good offense right now. The Eagles don't look good as a whole as a team, and I just would not be shocked at all if Jalen Hurts starts a few games later in the year. So, Jake, what's your hot take of the week?
So my hot take is that the 3-0 Titans will not make the playoffs. And if they do, it's going to be by just a hair, and they're going to make it as the seventh wild card spot. So the Vikings looked terrible in their first two games, and then they put up 750 total yards against the Titans. So they're 3-0, but they've won their three games by a combined 6 points. And if that isn't bad enough, their opponents are combined 1-8 in those three games. So they're middle of the pack in terms of rushing yards and defense. Their passing attack hasn't looked great, and it's kind of just evident that Ryan Tannehill needs a running game to work. And when it's working, which it has in certain halves or certain quarters throughout their season, then yeah, he's looked good off play action. He's looked like a capable quarterback. But when their rushing attack gets shut down, he doesn't look like a very good quarterback at all. They're tied second in the league in interceptions. They've built up yards, and they've also given up a lot of yards. And I don't see this team, especially in their next few games. So they face the Steelers, the Bills, and a Texans team that is much better than their 0-3 record. I think that they could come out and surprise some teams and recover throughout the season. And especially, I mean, I talked about at the top of the episode where this COVID scare could negatively affect the Titans team. And I mean, I wrote this about them not making the playoffs before that came out, but this even more, or this gives them less of a shot at making the playoffs because they have to do virtual meetings throughout this week. I mean, we just talked about the competitive advantage that the Steelers are going to have this next week. They already have, in my view, they already have the talent advantage, the Steelers, but if they have the competitive advantage, I think it's all over for the Titans, at least in this next game. They'll drop to 3-1. The Bills team looks very good, and I don't see it right now. I feel like the Texans, even though they're not playing very well, they are 0-3. They have also been 0-3 in two of the last 3 years, and they've made the playoffs in one of those last three. So they're very capable of starting slow and recovering. But the Colts also look very good in that division. So I don't think the Titans will win the division, even though they're leading it right now. And the AFC wildcard spots looking like they're going to fill up, especially with the AFC North and the Steelers and Ravens having two very good teams. And the AFC East with the Patriots and the Bills having two very good teams. So it's going to be tough for me to validate the Titans at 3-0 to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I definitely see your point where they don't look like their record says. And we talked about this where the Bears, probably the worst 3-0 team in the league. And I think the Titans might be the second worst, where they just haven't, you know, looked convincing in their wins. And, you know, I think the Vikings are a better team than their 0-3 record shows. But, I mean, obviously they played in a tight one, needed a kick to win that game. But I definitely see your point. I don't know if this is entirely true. I think they still have a shot at the division. I think it will come down to them or the Colts. And, you know, I know you're not going to like this, but I'm still not totally convinced on the Colts. I think that, you know, they played some bad competition the last few weeks, and, you know, I'm excited to see, you know, these two teams play each other in the near future. But, you know, I'm with you. I think that the Titans' record will definitely go down a bit. I think after this next stretch against the Steelers, Bills, and Texans, I think they'll beat the Texans, but they'll lose to the Steelers and Bills. So they'll be 4-2. I think in the end they'll end up around 9-7, 10-6, and, you know, we'll see if that wins this AFC South division. It'll be close with them and the Colts, but, you know, if not, you're probably right. I think they will be around the 6th or 7th seed. I think they'll make the playoffs definitely, but, you know, if they don't win the division, I think they will be, you know, one of the lower seeds in the conference.
Yeah, I mean, they have to travel to Baltimore. They have to play a Bears team, which I would say that the Bears, in terms of overall talent, could be better than them, especially if Nick Foles continues to play this way. They have to play the Colts twice, which I agree. I'm not completely sold on them, but the way that they're playing right now, I would take them over the Titans. and then they have to play the Packers. So a bunch of difficult matchups coming up in the rest of their schedule, and I can't validate them as a playoff team. Obviously, it's a hot take, so very much could be wrong going down the stretch of the season, but it's just something that I saw. So moving into the NBA, what are you looking for in this Lakers-Heat NBA Finals?
So, well, first, we just want to say, obviously, we're recording this on Wednesday. Game one is tonight, so when you guys hear this on Friday, you'll know what the result is of game one. We don't know yet. But I think that the biggest thing is that the Lakers have not faced a team like the Heat in the playoffs, especially defensively. The Heat are a much better defending team than anyone the Lakers have faced, whether it's the Blazers, the Rockets, or the Nuggets. And it'll be really interesting to see how the Heat and Eric Spoelstra, you know, come up with their game plan against LeBron and Davis. Are they going to, you know, stick with the zone and see if that works? Or are they just going to go, man, put Bam on Anthony Davis maybe, and then, you know, throw guys like Jimmy Butler, Jay Crowder, and then maybe even Bam on LeBron at the same time? So I think that is definitely one of the things that I'm going to be looking out for.
So I wrote here, LeBron. He's the key for me, and I mean, you just talked about the Heat defense, and I think I totally agree where they are the best defense they've placed in this playoffs, but I really, really hope that Eric Spoelstra is stupid enough to play a zone, because LeBron is not Jason Tatum or Kemba Walker. Obviously, those two are great NBA players, but LeBron is going to find the holes any day of the week, all day. He's going to expose that zone. The man defense, I agree that they are a great defensive team. Either you play a man or a zone. But that zone, I think, is going to just get terrorized. And another key for me is the shooting of the Lakers. I don't think that they're capable of keeping it up. But if they are, this series isn't really going to be close. I think that their paint presence can keep them in the series and probably win them the series either way if their shooting doesn't go as planned or doesn't go as it has been throughout this playoff so far. But, I mean, LeBron was quoted earlier this week saying that every time he has lost the finals, he lost to the better team. The Heat are definitely Yeah, but okay, that might be an excuse, but the Heat are definitely not the better team. He said that he's dialed in. He's more dialed in than he's ever been. I mean, this bubble setting for LeBron, I think, has been an advantage for him, especially for some of these other teams like the Nuggets. We said that it was an advantage. I think it's been an advantage for LeBron and the Lakers as well. They've got their groove. And I don't know. I don't see the Heat winning this series, but they very much are capable of winning it because of that great defensive presence and their shooting.
Yeah, it's something about the Heat that I just think that they really have a good shot against the Lakers. I don't know if they're going to win, but I really think they're going to play a lot of close games. I think, you know, one of the things that we're going to have to look out for is, can the Heat shoot better than they did against the Celtics, where they shot only 32% from behind the arc after shooting 38% after the first two series? Now, I think that the Lakers aren't as good of a defensive team as the Celtics, where, you know, they had Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart to guard against those guards. But so I think that's something to look out for. And then another thing that I was thinking about is the Lakers have the two best players in the series in Davis and LeBron. But after that, the Heat arguably have the next four or five best players, where you could, you know, Jimmy Butler, Tyler Hero, Bam Adebayo, and then, you know, if you want to throw Jay Crowder and, you know, maybe Duncan Robinson, a few others that are going to be on the border with those Lakers players. So it's really interesting. The Heat just have so many guys that they can throw out there and score, and we've talked about this all playoffs, where, you know, any single Heat player can go off one night and win them the game. We saw Tyler Hero, 37 points, you know. Anyone on this Heat team can go out and win the game for them, and I think that's, you know, going to be interesting to see if the Lakers can figure that aspect out.
Yeah, I mean, you just took the words out of my mouth. I wrote here that if you were to draft a team from this series, hypothetically, then LeBron and Anthony Davis would obviously be the first two picks. But the next four or five, maybe even six players would be from the Heat. The Heat bench definitely have the advantage against the Lakers, but the Lakers have the star power. Historically, in the NBA, I mean, obviously the better team always wins a series. But normally, when you're talking about the better team in terms of an NBA series, you're talking about who has the better players, who has the better star players. This series could be different, and I mean, this season as a whole is very much different. But historically, I mean, if you have the star power, whether that be Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, they didn't have the deepest teams, but they had the better duo and the better star power. So if you look at historically these playoff matches and playoff matchups and the NBA Finals in particular, I think Anthony Davis and LeBron can outmatch this Heat bench. And I mean, I just talked about it earlier and you just mentioned it as well, but the Lakers should win the rebounding battle. But for me, it's the shooting, because the Heat have shot 35.7%, which is lower than they probably should be shooting because they're a great shooting team. And the Lakers sit at 35.5%, just 0.2% lower. The Heat shoot many more threes, so obviously that's why the percentages are so close. But the finals, this stage could change this dramatically one way or the other. The Heat could go cold. The Lakers could go cold. Either way, I mean, that could change it dramatically because on paper, these teams line up perfectly, and it is the Lakers' biggest challenge so far.
Yeah, and you mentioned the threes, and I think, you know, guys like Markieff Morris, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Rajon Rondo are making threes at a much higher rate than they have at any point in their career for this entire postseason. So if they're able to keep that up, it's going to be tough to stop the Lakers. And, you know, one thing I'm going to look at is if these games are close in the end, it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, how it works out. We've seen the Heat. You know, I said this to you, Jake, the other night. If it's a close game, the Heat are going to win. If the Celtics win, it's going to be a blowout. And each time it's been a close game in these playoffs, the Heat have been able to have won, except for that one Bucks game four that was kind of just a fluke and they kind of just checked out. But, I mean, I just trust the Heat players overall more in the end, because if you have guys like Markieff Morris and Caldwell Pope taking threes in big games at the end, I just trust Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, and all those guys on the Heat a lot more, even if you have LeBron and AD.
Yeah, so another important thing to remember is that LeBron has been here before, and like even though he's not the biggest, he doesn't play the biggest role on this team, Rondo's been here before, Danny Green has been here before. The Lakers have many more players that have experience, and I mean the Heat have experience as well. They have Andre Iguodala, who is playing in his fifth straight finals, which is kind of going under the radar, and they obviously have Udonis Haslem, who doesn't play, but he is a huge leader in that locker room. The Heat obviously have the coaching advantage with Eric Spoelstra in terms of experience and coaching overall. But I just don't see the coaching mattering too much. Obviously, it's going to matter. It always matters. But I don't see it becoming such a problem in this series where, because LeBron is a coach in himself on the field or on the court, he figures it out as it goes. And, I mean, I'm talking about LeBron as if he is just an elite basketball player, and that's because he is. I think because we haven't seen him in the playoffs or in the finals, we kind of forget how dominant he's been. But even though it's been 2 years since we've actually seen him in the finals, I just expect him to come out and prove that he's still dominant, prove that he's the best player in the world. I mean, he has recorded his best postseason field goal percentage since the 2016 postseason, so he's on a roll right now. He's playing out of his mind, and his scoring is down, but his assists are up, and Anthony Davis and company, the rest of their team, are sharing the load in terms of that scoring production. And if they can keep that up, especially with the shooting aspect, I think that they could come out on top in this series.
Yeah, so just one more aspect that I find really interesting is that the Lakers make the highest percentage shots inside the paint in the NBA. So I think, you know, with Bam Adebayo inside inside the paint a lot of the time, will he be able to, you know, bring that percentage down? I think that'll be really interesting. But I'm going to pick the Heat in the series. I think they're going to win in six games. I think that they just have a lot of guys that they can throw at LeBron defensively to try and slow him down. I think that they do have the coaching advantage, and I'm not with you, Jake, where I do think coaching will be a big factor in the series. Because I think if the Heat win, I think it will be because Eric Spoelstra really tries to figure out, or really is able to successfully figure out, how to stop LeBron and Anthony Davis, or at least contain them to an extent and try and make other guys beat them. I think the Heat just have this mentality about them, and they really are confident. Jimmy Butler said they're not the underdogs in this series. They really feel like they can win. If it does go to a seventh game, I think that the Lakers will win, just because I think LeBron will, you know, just have something about him that game that we've seen before. But, you know, I think the Heat will take care of the Lakers, and I think they will win in six games.
Yeah, so the Heat and Lakers are both 12-3 entering these finals. And for me, I mean, you talked about how the Heat potentially checked out against the Bucks in one of their losses. But for each one of these Lakers losses, they didn't show up to that game. They, on paper, they would have won. If you were to redo that game, they would have won. And I don't see them checking out for any one of these single finals games. So for me, I'm going with the Lakers in six. I'm confident that LeBron and Anthony Davis are going to be dominant in the paint. Obviously, Bam Adebayo is not Nikola Jokic, obviously. I mean, that is just an insurmountable difference. And his paint presence defensively and even offensively is going to be something to worry about and to deal with. But I think that Anthony Davis can show up and dominate him in terms of offensive rebounding and production on that side of the ball. But also LeBron. I mean, Bam Adebayo is a great defender, but you can only be I mean, even if you're the greatest paint defender of all time, you throw Bill Russell in there, LeBron's going to finish more than half the time anyway. He's that dominant on the, maybe not against Bill Russell. That might have been an exaggeration. But Bam Adebayo obviously isn't Bill Russell, so let's forget I said that. So LeBron is just such a dominant paint finisher, and then if he's hitting threes on the outside, if the rest of them are hitting threes, I don't see any way that the Heat could win this series.
All right, well, I think that we can both agree that this is going to be a fun and exciting series. And
either way, it's going to be great to watch.
We're definitely excited to see Jimmy Butler in the finals as well. So before we move on to our final segment, we just want to touch on Doc Rivers. So Rivers was fired by the Clippers after 7 years in L.A. on Monday. And, you know, he was there for the end of the Lob City era. He had a lot of great teams. He had 550-win teams, but was never able to make it to the conference finals. This year, they underachieved greatly as not making it to the conference finals with a team that was, you know, picked by many to win the NBA finals outright. And, you know, I think that this might be justified just because of the expectations this year and how badly the Clippers went out at the playoffs and, you know, losing 3-1 to the Nuggets. But the only reason that I think they shouldn't have fired him is because, you know, we've seen a lot of times with these super teams where they, you know, take a year or two to figure it out. And, you know, look at the Heat with LeBron 2011. They just had a really bad finals loss to the Mavericks. They looked awful. And, you know, the next 2 years they won the NBA Finals. So I think that would be one reason they should have given him another chance. But I definitely think it's justified to, you know, get rid of him.
Yeah, you just touched on that Heat dynasty. I mean, I was going to bring that up as well, where if you would have fired Eric Spoelstra after that, I don't think that you could have brought another coach in and won the finals the next year. I mean, that's just not how it works. So I think the coach very much could have been the problem in this scenario where you build a super team, but I don't think he was. I mean, the Clippers team basically voted to leave the bubble, whether that be for political reasons or other reasons. They just didn't want to be there. I don't think it was fair to get rid of him after one season. Obviously, he was there for 7 seasons, but one season with this brand new roster and under the circumstances of this unusual season, I would have loved to see Doc Rivers back next year and make an actual run. But either way, he's going to find a job either in Philly, Houston, somewhere else. And, I mean, he's a championship coach from Boston. He knows what he's doing. He's a phenomenal coach, and I didn't see it validated. I understand why they did it, but, I mean, this next season is going to be the most important season in the Clippers franchise history. Obviously, last year they had the high expectations, but this year they've all played together 1 year. It's going to be the most important season in their franchise history, and I just think they needed Doc Rivers there for that stability, but obviously he's gone now.
Yeah, and I think it's also really interesting because, you know, a lot of what we heard is that the reason that a lot of these players came to the Clippers, specifically Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, was because of Doc Rivers. They wanted to play under Doc and win a championship for him. And, you know, we heard that Steve Ballmer, the Lakers owner, met with Paul George and Kawhi this week, and they weren't able to, you know, really talk him out of, you know, getting rid of Doc. So I think it's just really interesting that Ballmer went this way. And, you know, we've heard that Tyronn Lue is the early favorite to get this job, and it'll be interesting to see what direction they go with it.
Yeah, so what's one thing that you're looking forward to this week, Harrison?
Well, I mean, the one thing I'm looking forward to the most is the MLB playoffs, but this round at least will be done by Thursday. I just want to talk about the Yankees though real quick. Woke up with a smile on my face this morning. They won 13-2 last night against the Indians, so they have a 1-0 series lead. They, you know, they'll try and close it out tonight, and obviously you guys will know by Friday. So the other thing that I'm looking forward to this week, and I just want to learn more about the Dallas Cowboys. We talked about them earlier. They have a big game this week. They play the Browns this week at home. The Browns are 2-1. They've looked pretty good the last two games. I mean, beating the Bengals and the Washington football team. So, you know, nothing special. But, you know, if they win, and if they win pretty convincingly and, you know, show up on defense, then I'll feel more confident about them running away with this really bad NFC East division. If they lose, I think there's only going to be more questions. I think stuff is going to start to unravel in that locker room. As, you know, we saw this last year with the Cowboys where they just weren't able to beat teams for whatever reason and just underperformed. I think they've done that so far this season, and if they win this week, I think they'll be in good shape. If they lose, it's going to be really interesting to see what goes down in the Cowboys locker room and the rest of the NFC East. Jake?
Yeah, I mean, the Cowboys for me, I mean, that's going to be very, very interesting to watch. I don't think that those two previous games mattered much, only because, I mean, you talked about they played the Bengals and the football team, but, I mean, this Browns game, not great competition either, but it is a very important game for them.
So what's one thing you're looking forward to this week?
I mean, we talked about it earlier, but Carson Wentz. I feel like we shouldn't be talking about him, but because he's a former number one overall pick, he's a former MVP candidate, we expect him to play much better than he has been playing. I mean, you talked about how bad he's looked, and I just think that I trust Doug Peterson to dumb down this offense like he claims he will, so that the throws will be simpler and the offense will be easier to run. He also claims that he isn't even considering benching Carson Wentz. He's averaging 2 interceptions per game and a league-low 5.6 yards per attempt. He just simply has to play better to keep his job. I don't think Jalen Hurts is the answer either, because even if you put Jalen Hurts in there, he's not going to be capable of doing the things that you need to do to win. Right now, this team is struggling on all facets. Carson Wentz is simply just trying to do too much. They need to either run the ball more or just create better opportunities for him to throw the ball, get the receivers more open. I mean, you see, obviously, the comparison between Carson Wentz and Patrick Mahomes is nothing to be compared. But the offenses, you can tell that Patrick Mahomes has a little bit easier than Carson Wentz does, and his numbers just show that by far. He's a better quarterback, he's a better talent, obviously, but the Andy Reid-led offense just makes it way easier for Patrick Mahomes to find the open guy, to view those lanes, and I just see Carson Wentz struggling to find those open lanes, and Doug Peterson is also struggling to provide those open lanes, and I just think that as a number one pick and former MVP candidate, he has a skill set to succeed. And, I mean, you talked about how Nick Foles won a championship for this team, and he hasn't really done much. But I think that he still has more to prove, and they have a hard schedule coming up as they face the 49ers. Obviously, the 49ers are down a few key players, but it's going to be a big game for them, and they really need to win this game or at least prove that there's still something in the tank for Carson Wentz for him to be able to keep his job.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously talked about it earlier how I think Wentz will lose his job at some point, and this is a big game for him. You know, coming off of, you know, another bad game against the Bengals where he actually did lead, you know, a game-tying touchdown drive towards the end of regulation. That was impressive. But besides that, just looked really bad all game, looked bad in overtime. And, you know, a banged-up 49ers defense. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he and the Eagles can do because, you know, this is a big week for the Eagles. You know, they're still right in the thick of things in the NFC East to fight despite not winning a game through 3 weeks. So, you know, a big week for them, and, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, they're only a half game out, like you just mentioned, and I talked about the 49ers they have next week. Then after that, it doesn't get much easier. They play the Steelers and the Ravens. So if he can't figure it out this next week against a very deflated, in terms of injury, 49ers team, then he's definitely not going to figure it out against this elite Steelers defense and a great Ravens team. So thank you guys for listening. And,
one more thing. So there was just a report that Doc Rivers is meeting with the 76ers in the Philly area. So
I think he's the right coach for that job.
I think that right now he's going to be the favorite, and if not, it'll be Mike D'Antoni. So we'll see how that goes. But, yeah, I mean, as Jake, you were starting to say, thank you guys for listening, and, you know, we'll be here next week. Thank you.